Okay, well, welcome everyone to the Think, Pink, and Grow Rich program. I'm Nancy Roberts. I'm here with Chris Kenny. And tonight we're going to be talking about something a little intriguing if you've never heard about it before. It's called The Work. And the topic of this call, or the title of this call, is Gaining Freedom Through The Work. So I know it sounds a little funny because it is not usually what we think of when we think of work, being freedom. But the work is actually a process that Chris and I have learned in the last, I'd say, year, 2 years. And it's something that was very profound for us and for our relationship. And we loved it so much that we took it and put it right away into a workshop that we do, the Overcoming Call Reluctance Workshop. And then the participants of that workshop found it so profound that we knew we had to share it, you know, pretty much with anybody we coach and work it into this group coaching program. So anything you want to say about it before we kind of get into it?
Well, I just want to say that it's a process that we still use. It's a process that we still use with all of our clients. It's a process that we still use in our own relationship. I think what you'll find is, if you knew us personally, we're not teaching anything that we ourselves have not used and seen tremendous results from. So our hope is that you'll receive the information from a really authentic place because, you know, just last night I was doing the work myself on some of my own thoughts. So we still do this. We do it on a consistent basis. To me, this process is one of the most profound but simple things that I've ever learned, and grabbing onto this concept that we're going to teach tonight and learning to embrace it could really be life-changing, and it can release a whole lot of weight from you. And I'll explain that, I guess, when the time comes. But I guess sit back and relax. We would like to invite all of you to interact with us. We are going to need some volunteers. But I think Nancy's going to start and go through some preliminary information with regard to the work. I do want to say that this process is not our process. It's a process that we have borrowed with permission from Byron Katie. And Byron Katie is the author of a book, and the book is called Loving What Is. So if you love the process, by all means, go pick up her book. Byron Katie is a real advocate of having everybody teach this because she wants it to impact as many lives as possible. So that being said, we're going to dive right in.
Okay. So one thing I do want to check, though, so at some point I'll turn it over to you. I just want to make sure the worksheet that I didn't change that. So if you have the same worksheet, we have a couple versions of worksheets, unfortunately, floating around. But if you have a worksheet in front of you that says number one, mission review, we're actually not going to do that. That's just because that's out of sequence from the last time we taught this program. And I can't remember if I changed the format of the worksheet or not. So basically, we're going to go to number two, and I'll double-check that they have the same one we do. It says, the work is a process that allows us to examine the thoughts, beliefs, and judgments that hurt us. So basically, what the work helps us do is start to examine all the thoughts that run around in our head all day that disempower us. So a lot of people might call that, you know, negative chatter, or their gremlin, or that voice inside their head that, you know, makes them feel bad. That tape that's running in your head runs constantly. And if you're sitting there saying, what tape is she talking about? That's the tape I'm talking about, the one that's constantly passing judgment on others, on yourself. And what you're going to find with the work and, you know, hopefully through this process, is that it's those exact kind of thoughts that are really behind all the emotional challenges that we have, the frustration, the anger, the pain, the self-doubts, the limiting beliefs. It's all running on that tape. So the work is a way to dig into those beliefs and really examine the validity of them. So there's really not much more to say about that because it's almost like you can't really understand it or comprehend it until you experience it. So that's why tonight we're actually going to have you experience it. So number three says, as long as you think the cause of your problems is out there, so that's what goes in the blanks, out there, as long as you think that anyone or anything else is responsible for your suffering, the situation is hopeless. It means you are forever in the role of the victim. So I'm going to say that again because this is very important to get. As long as you think the cause of your problems is out there, as long as you think that anyone or anything else is responsible for your suffering, the situation is hopeless. It means you are forever in the role of the victim. So Chris and I coach people every single day who come to us with challenges, challenges in their business, challenges in their relationships, and so very often they're pointing the finger out at somebody else. Well, he did this to me, or she said this to me, and then using that the reason why they're stuck, why they've stopped, why their business isn't growing, why their relationships are stuck. And really, we talked about this on a Q&A call a week or maybe a couple weeks ago, where we talked about projection, and we said whatever it is that you see out there that's bothering you, whatever it is that's triggering you, is really something in you. And a lot of you got that, you know, from the explanation that we did, but a few of you were confused as well. Well, this process, the work, is going to help you understand that projection further and help you understand that if you can get to the point where you see yourself as the source of everything, I know that's sometimes hard to grasp, but the source of everything, then you ultimately are back in control. You are now in the driver's seat of your life, and you have the say of how things go. It's not about what he did or she said. It's about what is it you choose to do with that. So that's really the process that we're talking about. And Chris right now is going to kind of go into like the brain, you know, almost like the internal part of this and how this actually happens or how it comes to be that
Basically how projection happens.
Yeah, that's a good one, honey.
Yeah, basically it is. It's how projection happens. And the nice thing about this, just to elaborate a little bit further about what Nancy said, is the goal here is our hope is that from this information you're going to feel a huge sense of empowerment, because a lot of you are, you know, you're seeing things in your business or things in your life that you don't like, things that are unpleasant, you're getting some results that you don't want. And what the work teaches is that everything that we need in order to get us where we want to go is actually within us. Everything you need to get to where you want to go, to achieve your goals, your dreams, everything is already in you, and you don't need somebody to behave in a certain way or to do a certain thing in order for you to be happy or in order for you to be successful. All the power that you need is in you already, and this process will sort of give you access to that power. In that, like Nancy said, it allows you to release yourself from being the victim, and it puts you in control of your outcome, and you're in control of your results. Now, when we look at the diagram, what this diagram really refers to is, I'm going to explain this, and you know, you can write it down sort of, kind of, you can write it word for word, listen to the recording, whatever you want to do. I just want you to understand this conceptually. And what that really means, what that refers to is, in every second, our brain is exposed to 2 million bits of information, 2 million bits of information per second. Now, our brain can only handle about 40 bits of information per second. So again, we're exposed to 2 million bits of information per second, but our brain can only handle about 40 bits of information per second. So what happens before we even think, we have to filter the information. The brain has to filter that information, has to break that information down from 2 million bits to about 40 bits of information per second. Again, happens before thought. Now, this is the important part for you to grasp. The filter that's used is based on your values, your beliefs, and programming about yourself. The filter is based on the values, the beliefs, and the programming that you have about yourself. So So what that means is you view the world through the lens of how you see yourself. You view the world through the lens of how you see yourself. And this is extremely important because what it means is that you can't see something in someone else if it does not live in you. Because you're looking through the filter of how you see you. So if you didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to see it in someone else. Now, I don't mean to put a completely negative spin on it. So we're not talking about just the bad qualities. Here's the good news. Now, if you see selfishness in someone else, that's because it's living in you and you haven't dealt with it. You haven't addressed it. You haven't embraced that part of who you are. But if you see greatness in someone else, that's also because greatness lives in you. So if you look at a national, you look at your national, you look at somebody in Mary Kay that you respect a great deal and you look at all of her great qualities, you wouldn't be able to see all of her great qualities if they didn't live in you. Because again, you're viewing the world through the lens of how you see yourself. Now, how do we get a look at this part of us? How do we get a look at what we're specifically talking about here? Where does it show up? Where does projection actually show up? So what we want to do is we want to actually take you through a little bit of an exercise, and this is where we're going to need some participation. But Nancy wants to do something first. She's giving me the signal, so I'm going to pass the phone over to Nancy for number five.
Well, before we do that, I just want to clarify any confusion from the beginning. We did change the form when we sent it out. So here's what your form starts with, because I didn't start in the same place as you. You have a form that at number one says a quote. And the quote is, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. So that actually goes really well in line with what Chris was just explaining. So that's from the Talmud. We see the world not as it is, but as we are. And then number two was the work is a process that allows us to examine the thoughts, beliefs, and judgments that hurt us. And then I think we're on track from there.
Yep.
So, okay, so turn the page to number five, and we'll get back to where Chris was. And do we want to explain or just have them write this first, and then we'll talk about the process? Okay, so first what we want you to do is we want you to fill out number five. So number five says, pick a person who has been causing you stress, write their name here, and why they are causing you stress. So now you aren't going to have to share the person's name if you come on the line, but just write it down for your own purposes. So let's say, for example, I don't like Sue, or I'm angry at Sue, or I'm confused by Sue, or I'm saddened by Sue, anything that fits the situation, because she is so blank. So let's say it's, I don't like Sue because she is so bossy. So go ahead and fill that out with somebody who's causing you stress. So it shouldn't take up too much time to come up with someone.
Well, and truly, you know, you can pick a person in your unit. You can pick a person in your life. You can pick a spouse. You can pick a prior partner that you had. You can pick anybody that you want here. In other words, do this work wherever you think it would be most beneficial.
Yeah. So I am angry at or I'm frustrated by. Those might be some other words to use. So once you have that, we want to explain to you the process of the work, and then we're actually going to do the work with somebody on their statement, okay? So in number six, it says, now we'll do the work on the statement above. So the way the process of the work works is you ask four questions, and then there's two turnaround statements. So the four questions are this. Number one, is it true? Number two, Is it absolutely true? Number three, how do you behave when you think this thought? And number four, how would you behave if you couldn't think that thought? So if it was impossible to think that thought, how would you behave? And then the two turnaround statements, the first one there, A, is the opposite of the original statement. So whatever the original statement is, that first turnaround is just the opposite of it. And then we're going to ask which is truer. And then the second turnaround statement, B there, is you replace they or he or she with I. So in place of Sue, you would put yourself. And then we'll ask which is truer. So if somebody wants to come on the line and share what it is that they wrote, we'll be able to do the work with you so you can see this process sort of in action. So go ahead and hit star six if you've got a statement and a person you'd like to do the work with. Go ahead and hit star six. Hello?
Hello, I have one. This is Jennifer.
Okay. Hello, who's this?
This is Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. Okay, my statement I put... I don't like Elizabeth, or I'm angry with Elizabeth because I have to earn time with her.
Okay.
We're just writing it down. Hang on 1 second.
Okay. And say a little bit more about that. It's a good statement. I just want to hear you explain it a little bit more.
Well, this is my director.
Okay.
And I have asked, you know, could I please shadow you while you work? Can I be the fly on the wall and watch you make booking calls, follow you around for a day to see what the job of director looks like? And she has said no. And in order for me to get some time with her, I have to perform, you know, like five bookings and then call me and I'll coach you through coaching them the call so they'll hold. I'm like, but that's not what I want.
Okay.
I want somebody to show me what the job looks like. Don't just hand me a training manual. Say, you know, read this, go make some calls. You can do it. It's all within you. I just like some on-the-job training.
Statement you want to work
on? It's a workable statement.
Okay.
I think it's a workable statement. Angry, I need to put
angry
it in.
Angry was Elizabeth because I have to earn time with her. We're just working on the statement, just making sure it'll work, fit into the process.
Oh, okay, great. Hey.
Yep, no problem. So what is it that it makes you feel, what's the really underlying feeling that you have because you have to earn time with her?
Well, it triggers my stuff. And that was part of my coaching with Chris. And it's related to Imago and that I had to, in order to get any private time with my dad, I had to make very good grades in school. So I would have to work. And then sometime near the end of the 6 weeks, I would get a payoff of time with my dad. So that comes up, you know, when I can't spend time with somebody I respect and I admire, they're going to make me earn it. It triggers my stuff.
Right. Okay. Well, good. So we don't even need to do the work with you then. I'm just kidding.
No, we're kidding. It's good that you have that awareness, because what she's done is she's triggered an incompletion in you.
Okay.
But let's go through the process. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of different directions we could go here, but let's stick with the process we're here to teach. So we're going to ask you the four questions and then do the turnaround statements.
Okay.
This is not this part, because it is true that she's angry, right? But it's mm-hmm. just that I have to earn time with her.
I'm angry, then I have to turn. Right. Okay. Anyway, okay, so here's what we're doing. Your statement I've written down, I'm angry with Elizabeth because I have to earn time with her. In other words, I have to earn. Yeah, let's look at the judgment alone. The judgment is I have to earn time with her. Right? Are we on the same page?
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, is that true?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and we'll give you that. And we, you know, you do have to answer these questions in the way that you see true for yourself. Don't give us a particular answer because you think it's what we're looking for. The next statement is it absolutely true? In other words, is it absolutely true beyond 110% of a doubt that you have to earn time with her?
I'm not sure.
Oh, that's another rule. You have to answer yes or no.
No.
So why do you say no?
I can reach her by phone.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
It has to be very short.
Mm-hmm. But you can reach her by phone.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good because
I mean,
it actually challenges your story a little bit, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So here's where the rubber hits the road in this process.
Okay.
It's right here on question number 3, in my opinion. So the question I want you to really think about and really explore this the best you can, the question is how do you behave towards her or just how do you behave in general? When you think this thought, I have to earn time with her. What happens to your behavior?
Well, I start feeling very obstinate. It's like I reacquaint myself with my inner teenager and just feel very defiant. Not that I, you know, I don't mouth off to her or anything. It's just I pout. I guess if you're gonna make me say it, there we go. I stew about it.
Hmm? You stew about it?
I stew and then I sort of freeze up and don't take the actions necessary to earn the time. And I don't make the 5 booking calls so that I could get some time with her.
Okay, so you stop working.
Yes, I stop working.
Okay. So.
How does it end up impacting your business?
How's it impact your business is really the biggest question.
Well, I guess since this has been a fairly new thought that I have been thinking. I'm grateful I haven't been doing this for very long, but yeah, it turns a power start into a power stop, and it's not productive. It's not moving me towards the goals that I want.
Right. So basically, I'm going to put this in different words. You end up stopping. You stop putting time into Mary Kay. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I stopped putting action into Mary Kay. I will keep on thinking about it, but I'm not in a productive spiral at that point at all. And it's kind of like you guys said, that it's kind of like I put myself in the victim role.
Mm-hmm. But
if she would just show me, then I would be fine. I could get back to work.
Mm-hmm. If she would just show me.
Yes.
I want you to write that statement down, if she would just show me. All right. So what ends up happening is you become obstinate, triggers your inner teenager, you pout, you become defiant, you stew, you freeze up, you stop working. And what that really means is you stop putting time into Mary Kay. Correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and then your other statement is if she would just show me. So let's move to question 4. And question 4 is another hypothetical question. How would you behave If you couldn't think the thought, I have to earn time with her. In other words, completely drop that story, and what would happen to your behavior? Are you alive?
Yes, I am. I think I would keep on working. It's really weird how a thought can be such a speed bump.
You'd keep on working. So can we say you would keep putting time into Mary Kay?
Yes.
Okay. So what else would you do? More specifically, what would happen? Drop the story completely, let it go. What would happen?
Well, I wouldn't feel poor, pitiful me. I wouldn't let the self-doubt come in, or there wouldn't be a story there to trigger the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just my being is enough
mm-hmm.
to warrant time with anybody that I could share time with.
Did you say time with me would be enough? Is that what you said?
That I would be enough. It would not be based on my effort, or I wouldn't have a belief or a fear that someone's time would be based on my effort. I would just go on about my business
mm-hmm.
without that fear.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and move. Let's move on to the turnaround statements. And the first turnaround statement is very simple. It's the exact opposite of the starting statement. So the starting statement is, I have to earn time with her. So what would be the turnaround for that?
I don't have to earn time with her?
Yeah, that's correct. Which one's truer?
This is an objective question now, right?
It is definitely an objective question. You want to answer it? Well, be subjective. I guess answer it in terms of what you think the right answer is.
What's true for you?
What's truer for you? You have to earn time with her, or you don't have to earn time with her? What's truer for you?
Well, okay. I've got this thought now that, I don't have to do anything.
Right.
So if I don't have to do anything, then I don't have to earn time with her.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's good enough. That's good enough inquiry. What we want you to see here is that you're in control. You're completely in control. You can or you can't. You decide to earn the time or you decide not to. It's up to you. But don't be victimized by it.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the last piece of this is the last turnaround. I have to earn time with her. And I actually would like to use the full statement. I'm angry with Elizabeth because I have to earn time with her. What you do here is you turn, whenever you are referring to a subject, and this is going to be a little bit difficult with this statement, you have to replace it with yourself or the opposite. In other words, angry with Elizabeth would turn into angry with me. Okay? Because I have to earn time with, instead of saying her, it would be me. I'm angry with me because I have to earn time with me.
Oh, there's an element of truth there.
Yeah, so which is truer? I'm angry with Elizabeth because I have to earn time with her, or I'm angry with me because I have to earn time with me?
The latter.
Yeah, go ahead and say it.
I am angry with me because I have to earn time with me. I hold out engaging in any free time or reading a book or something until I achieve some objective, and then I get myself off track and I don't achieve the objective, so I never get the reward. And it's like I'm dangling a carrot and never giving myself the prize. And then I'll take an entire day and read a novel and get absolutely nothing done for anybody, and then get caught up in that non-productive cycle. Oh, gosh, this is effective. Okay.
So what's happening? You are projecting your anger of yourself not finding time for you onto your director.
Wow.
It has absolutely nothing to do with your director whatsoever. It has everything to do with you.
You are right. Holy cow.
All she's doing is holding a mirror up to you. She is mirroring something that you don't like about yourself back to you, and now you resent her for it. So, what do you think about that?
That is one of the most profound realizations I've had in a long time, and it is spot on true. And I'm grateful to catch it before it became any more toxic than it's been.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's very true about your, when you talked about what happens when you think the thought, we came to the agreement that you stop putting time into Mary Kay. So there's probably some anger that you've stopped putting time into Mary Kay as well. But the anger is at yourself. You project it onto Elizabeth.
Yeah, and Jennifer, I also think it comes through when you said, we were talking about how would you behave if you couldn't think that thought. You said, I would be enough. Without that thought, I would just simply be enough. And so what you have to realize is because you're projecting that onto Elizabeth, it's really you who has to learn that you're just enough, that you're enough to read that novel, or you're enough to give yourself that time that you're lacking. So the lesson there for you, like Chris said, that she's just reflecting back to you, is it's you who has to learn that you're enough and that you're worth the time.
And she's also trying to teach you the lesson that you can do it with you can do it without mirroring everything that she does. In other words, you probably, and again, you know, I want to know what you think about this. If you have that thought, I am enough, now do you need to be shadowing her for a day?
I have a thought that I do because I catch myself just keep trying to reinvent the wheel. And it seems like if it's been done before, wouldn't it be easier to see it done than to make it up my way?
You know, and I guess I have a part of me that says, yep, I agree. It'd be nice to shadow her for a day. But the problem is the fact that you're triggered the way that you are from the fact that you have to earn the time. She's trying to build a leader. And if you're trying to build leaders, you have to put things in place where people have to earn your time. Because then she will service and she will love, you know, she loves her whole unit, I'm sure, but she's going to spend more time with those that are showing up because that's what she should be doing. So she's giving you the chance to show up, and you're choosing not to.
And just so we, like, really start to see how this isn't what happens in the external world, this is really how we respond to it, Elizabeth could say that to three different consultants. You know, go make five calls and come back to me, and, you know, then go do this and then come back to me. One person will be like, got it, done, we'll run off, we'll make the calls, we'll come back to her. And then she'll give them something else to do, and they'll go off and they'll do it and they'll come back to her. And they keep earning time with her, and they don't even have the thought that it's, that's not fair or it angers them, because they don't have this internal thing inside them that they struggled with their father. So they just go do, and then they come back and then they get the reward. The only reason this triggers you is because of what you've so well identified, is that this was a wound in your childhood. This was a little girl, however old you were, saying, how come I'm not enough? How come I have to earn time with my dad? And so Elizabeth has actually shown up in your life as a gift to show you that that is not healed. But here's the thing. You can't heal it with her, and you can't heal it with your dad. The only one you can heal it with is yourself. It's for you to start believing that you are enough. And then it won't matter if you have to earn time. It won't trigger you at all. You'll just go do the calls, and you'll come back to Elizabeth and say, okay, done, what's next? So do you see how she can have that same response with three different people, and based on whatever's going on in them, they're going to have a very different reaction?
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, okay, I want everybody to write down the statement. I think we've said it before. The statement is, if it triggers me, it's about me. If it triggers me, it's about me.
And so I just want to take this lesson a little bit further, because I want to make sure we understand exactly where we typically go with something like this. So when we're triggered by something, the first thing we do is go look for other people that are triggered by it as well. So we go to our unit members or we go to our team members and we say, doesn't it bug you when Elizabeth does so-and-so and such-and-such? And if somebody says, no, not really, we move on, because clearly they're not going to support our point of view, and we go find somebody else who does agree with us. Well, all we've done is found somebody that has the same wound we have and that it triggers them too. And now we start to build evidence that our point of view is right, this thought is correct, and Elizabeth is wrong. And so that's what we tend to do with any beliefs that you know, hurt us or disempower us, is we gather evidence. We gather people around it who see it the way we see it, and then we call it a fact. We turn it into like this, like it's objective. Like, well, everybody in my team thinks that she's bossy, or everybody in my team thinks that she's arrogant, because you've collected enough people around you that believe your point of view because they see it as well. We have to be very careful not to do that.
What we want you to all start to do is start looking at the judgments that you have about other people and realize that those are parts of yourself that you're struggling with. We have to realize that the people in our lives, the people in our relationships, the people in our units are holding up a mirror to us. So what you have to look at is, what is she mirroring back to me? What is she mirroring back to me? And if you ask yourself that question, and you look and I have to earn time with her, you know, well, you ask yourself, what is she mirroring back to me? And what she's mirroring back is you have to earn time with you, and you're angry about that. So people are always mirroring back to us, you know, what it is that we need to see and the lessons we need to learn. And I think God puts these people in our place and in our path to teach us these lessons, and they will keep showing up until we learn the lesson.
So, Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing that. My guess is that everybody learned a ton from that. Is there anything you want to say to complete before we move on?
That was amazing. Thank you for taking the time to work through that with me.
You're welcome.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks. Okay, so now we're going to move on to number 7. It's another area where people kind of get hung up in their business. And we're going to have you complete the statement, my prospects think I'm too pushy. My prospects think I'm blank, whatever that is for you. The one I wrote down was too pushy, because that's what I used to be worried about.
So to put it another way, it's basically when you're making a decision not to pick up your phone and make calls, what is it that you're afraid your prospects are going to think of you? In other words, what's that thing that you're afraid of that's preventing you from picking up the phone? Nancy's used to be, my prospects think I'm too pushy.
It wasn't too pushy. I just remembered. Mine wasn't too pushy. Mine was, they're going to think I'm needy. I didn't want them to think I was needy and needed the business, so I wouldn't call them. Because God forbid I don't want to look needy.
So just finish that statement.
It could be my prospects think I'm too
aggressive, or
assertive.
They think I'm annoying. They think I'm selfish.
They think I'm only after the money.
Whatever it is that prevents you from picking up the phone. And then if we could, what we'd like to do is we'd like to have another volunteer. And Nancy and I will do the work with you on the statement that you pull out. So if you're ready for an aha moment, feel free to hit star 6.
Aha moments, guaranteed.
And we will lead you to your next aha moment.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Ann.
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
Great.
Awesome.
Go ahead, you can.
So do you have a statement?
I do.
Okay, great. You want to give it to us?
Sure. My prospects think I'm begging.
Okay. Prospects think I'm begging. That's a good one.
And what specifically are you begging for?
Nancy just said, I'm needy. I either need money, or I need sales, or I need to reach a goal, or.
Okay, let's call it. They think you're begging for the money.
Okay.
And then we'll go ahead and go through the process.
As long as that resonates with you.
Okay. It does.
Okay, great. So the statement is, my prospects think I'm begging for the money. So number one, is it true? Is it true that your prospects think that?
Well, I don't ever ask them if they think I'm begging for money.
Okay, so with these first two questions, we're going to be tough. You can only answer yes or no.
Okay.
So is it true that your prospects think you're begging for the money? Yes or no?
I guess more than not, it's no.
Okay. So when the answer to that first question is no, you can just skip the second question because the second question is, it absolutely true? So you already said no. So how do you behave when you think this thought, that your prospects think you're begging for the money?
I remind myself that I am filling a need that they have.
So what you're saying is this thought doesn't stop you from picking up the phone?
Not every time.
Okay. Yeah, I see you trying to be tricky with us. Okay, so when it does stop you from picking up the phone, that's a response of that thought, right?
Right.
So that's how you behave when you think this thought. When this thought's really running in your head, it stops you from picking up the phone. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it usually leads to other thinking, too.
Other thinking, too?
Yeah.
So then where else does your mind go from there?
Maybe they're busy. Maybe I'm interrupting something important going on. Probably not a good time. You know, if I look and see what time it is, oh, they could be getting supper ready. Oh, they could be getting the kids ready for bed now that it's
gotcha. So it starts
9 o'clock or,
starts
you know,
just, making more excuses.
Right.
Is why not to call them, right?
Right. It's like that's part of the downhill.
Okay. So then when that happens, how does that impact your business?
Well, I get less appointments booked.
Yeah.
Or I get less follow-ups with my customers to check and see if they're running low on anything, so I make less money.
Right. Okay. So less calls equals less money. And then how does that end up feeling at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month when there's less money?
Well, my bank account looks really terrible. I'm dissatisfied with myself. I know I should have done better. And frustrated because I know that through customers, through good customer service, that increases the business, increases referrals, which could possibly, if those people aren't wanting to recruit, then maybe somebody they know could possibly recruit and help them in the long run with whatever
okay.
need they have.
Okay, but let's stay with the original question. So how you behave when you think this thought, because you're constantly trying to put a positive spin on it, and right now we're actually asking you not to be positive. I know it's hard to understand, but so basically when you think this thought, you stop picking up the phone, you start making excuses, you believe you're interrupting something that they have going on that's more important, you make less calls, therefore you make less money, end up satisfied with yourself in front.
And then I start begging, it feels like.
and then you feel like you're begging. Okay. So next question, how would you behave if you couldn't think that thought? If it was impossible to think that your prospects think you're begging for the money, how would you behave?
I'd make more calls.
Okay. And then what would that do for your business?
It would increase possible appointments. It would increase money. It would increase possible recruits.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make Ann feel better, too.
Right. Because how would that feel? Increase in sales, appointments, money, recruits at the end of the month. How would that feel?
Like this thing, I'm finally getting the flow of everything and not letting stuff bother me.
Yeah, so finally getting the flow. Okay, great. So let's go ahead and do the two turnaround statements.
Did that email to the boys, my guys?
I think someone else might be unmuted. If somebody previously had unmuted their phone by *6, can you go ahead and hit it again? I was just getting some interference. Okay. So the first turnaround statement is the opposite of the original statement. So, Anne, the original statement was, my prospects think I'm begging for the money. So what's the opposite of that?
My prospects don't think I'm begging for the money.
Okay. So which one is truer for you?
Well, unless I ask them, I really don't know. So I guess the latter one, my prospects don't think I'm begging for the money.
Okay. Great. And then the second one is replace my prospects with I. So if you say that statement,
I think I'm begging for the money.
I think.
It's I think.
I am begging for the money.
Which is truer?
They think you're begging for the money, or you think you're begging for the money?
I guess I think I'm begging for the money.
Mm-hmm. And give me a couple of reasons why that's truer.
Well, a couple of reasons is because either I do make some money, or I get a referral, or I get an appointment with them, and they may buy more product or something that would fill more of a need with them, and then that would lead to increased sales. That would lead to maybe more referrals, just better customer satisfaction.
Why do you think it's truer that you think you're begging for the money?
Well, there's always money involved.
Mm-hmm.
Either the sale or the commission from the recruit.
Right. But here's what's interesting. You didn't say my prospects think I'm making money. So that wasn't the issue, that you're making money.
Right.
Or that you were even asking for money. Your statement was my prospects think I'm begging for the money.
Oh,
but
okay.
What the turnaround shows is that it's you who thinks you're begging for the money. So our question is, why is that truer? Why do you feel like you're begging for money?
Because in the base, I guess the basic thing that helps the business go is the money.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to tell you that I saw as we went through the questions and answers, is that when you think this thought, that they think that you're begging for the money, what it has you do is stop calling, which then equals less money in the bank account. So now you're actually coming from a place where you actually need the money, and now you feel like you're begging for the money.
Right.
Right? So this is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Can you see that? You project onto your prospects that you think they think that you're begging for the money, which leaves you in a place where you don't want to call people, which leaves your bank account empty, which means when you go to call people, you're actually coming from a place where you feel like you're begging for money.
Right. I see
that.
I see where I'd...
I'm surprised if you can choose, yes.
I'm doing that.
Anne?
Yes?
Where does money come from?
There's a lot of interruption. I'm not hearing you. I'm sorry.
Whoever's talking and is so there's somebody that's talking that's not muted. So if your name is not Ann, press make sure your phone is muted. Press *6 to make sure that your phone is muted. Okay. So Ann, where does money come from?
Where does money come from?
Uh-huh.
Well, most of the time when we do the work, we get paid for the work that we do.
Where's the source of the money?
Oh, the true source is God.
Correct. So what you have to remember here is when somebody's giving you money, it's not coming from the person. It's coming from God through the person.
Ah.
There's no reason for you to feel like you're begging for it because God wouldn't make you beg. God wants you to receive that money. It just happens to come through a person.
I've never actually thought that thought before.
Mm-hmm. It's coming from him through a person.
That's true.
So I think that's the absolute number one thing that we need to do, that we need to realize in order to let go of guilt around money, because what happens here, what I think is happening here, is you have some guilt and shame attached to money, which is causing you to be afraid to ask for it or feel like a beggar because you're performing a service and receiving money for it. So there's guilt and shame tied up in you around money. That being said, one of the ways to release that is realize it's not coming from people. Remember, it's always coming from God through people.
Very true.
You know, the other thing is, you know, and you might want to, I'm not sure if you listened to some of the bonus audios that we did in the last 2 weeks. We talked about how selling is service and how through giving we receive. and I guess I feel like you're forgetting that you're selling is actually giving. You're giving your prospect something, and then through that giving, you actually receive. But it's from the giving that you're receiving.
Okay.
The other interesting thing that I just wanted to shine a light on that was a statement that you made. You said that your statement was, I'm interrupting something they're doing that's important. Correct? Remember
right.
that?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The turnaround statement for that would be, I am interrupting something that I'm doing that's important. And which is truer?
Well, since I know what I'm doing, it's probably my end.
Yeah, I'm interrupting something that I'm doing that's important, because your mission in Mary Kay is an important one, isn't it?
Right, it is.
So you're now projecting that onto your prospect and thinking you're interrupting something they're doing that's important, when what's really happening is you're interrupting what you're doing that's important. And you're interrupting it by feeling like you're begging and then stopping. So do you understand how the projection's happening? Do you see the projection?
I do.
So, you know, our hope here is that all this awareness helps all of you and gets you into a place of empowerment, because what this really means is that if you can change your stories and realize that you're projecting yourself onto your people, it puts you in control when it comes to fixing it. You don't need anybody else to behave in a certain way to fix it. So let's move on to the next page.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for being brave enough to come in on the line and be live with us. So how do we change disempowering beliefs? Well, in order to really understand that, because that's what we're really talking about here, we're talking about, you know, beliefs we have in ourselves that we're projecting outward onto others. What we have to realize is that a belief, the reason we have a table there, is that what happens is something takes place, we see something, we hear something, and it passes through our mind, and then what happens is we will look for support of that something. And if we see support for that something will turn into a belief. In other words, if you have a thought that your prospects think you're pushy, that thought passes through your head, then you go and you look for support. Now, if you realize that, hey, wow, I've called this person, you know, 5 times and they're not picking up the phone, or I called them and they were a little bit short with me, the immediate meaning that you're going to attach to that is, see, they think I'm pushy. So a belief does not stand up if it does not have support underneath it. So what we suggest that you do is, if you're having this thought, something along the lines of, you know, they think I'm pushy, or they think I'm aggressive, or whatever it is, you want to put an empowering belief on the top of the table to counteract that. In other words, they think I'm pushy. You could say, instead of saying pushy, you could say on the top of the table, you would write, I'm not pushy. And then what you want to do is you want to write underneath on all the table legs all the reasons that support that you're not pushy. And they might sound something like this. I'm not pushy because I take a consultative approach. I'm not pushy because I'm here to be of service. I'm not pushy because I want what's best for them. I'm not pushy because my products increase self-esteem. I'm not pushy because my opportunity changes lives. And what you want to do is rebuild, but rebuild an empowering belief rather than a disempowering belief. And the other thing that's really important is that we take these parts of ourselves, and this is something we've been talking a lot about because we've been reading a lot about it, we've gone to workshops about this particular thing, and one of the things that really beats on our self-esteem is that we do not embrace certain parts or certain aspects of who we are. So, for example, when you look out and you get upset at somebody because you think they're selfish, well, we know that if you're looking at somebody else now and you're going, they're so darn selfish, well, that means that selfishness is living in you. and you have to really take a look at that. But the key here to building self-esteem is, instead of trying to suppress that part of you that's selfish, you want to embrace that part of you that's selfish. In other words, look at the times that you've been selfish in your life and look at how being selfish has serviced you. What gifts have being selfish given you? Because there are gifts. There's gifts in there. Because if we want to get to this point of really full empowerment and increased self-esteem, we want to feel great of who we are, we have to embrace all of who we are and all of who we were created to be. If you're selfish at times, God created you that way. But what we try to do instead is we try to suppress it. And suppressing it is so darn draining that it takes all of our energy. So that pretty much wraps up the content for the evening, and I'm glad that we had some really good conversations. I hope all of you found those helpful. And Nancy, do you have anything else that you wanna add?
Yeah, I would definitely say that on the table on that last page, to write, you're going to write the empowering belief, the new belief that you want to instill on the tabletop. I don't know if that was clear. But really pick the negative belief in order to reframe and turn into positive, the one that really runs you, the one that's really nagging at you. So if it's not about your prospects, but it's just this, you know, I'm not worth much, or I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable, I'm needy, whatever that belief is, that disempowering belief that's running you, that's the one that you want to start to reprogram. So I would pick the opposite of that, or an empowering way to say that, put that on the tabletop, and then come up with the supporting beliefs underneath it for the table legs. So just, this can be a powerful exercise. You can even take this table out and pin it up somewhere so you see, and that's where affirmations and things like that can come in handy, is to see that powerful positive statement and all the proof that you are that positive thing. Because so often that tape that's running in your head is the repeating of the negative and all the reasons the negative is true, and you want to start to reverse that process. So thank you so much for the two, Anna and Jennifer, who came on the line to do the work with us. If this is something, like Chris said early on, that you were intrigued by and you want to learn more about and you think there's some real power in it for you, I would run and get the book, Loving What Is by Byron Katie. It's also available on Amazon.com. It's a great book where she goes through the work, teaches you the process, and then shares example after example after example of doing the process with other people. So it's a really great, in my opinion, like fast reading book, because you're reading about other people's stories. And also, if you want, it didn't get a chance to come on the line and do the work with us, use this as an opportunity to book one of your coaching sessions with us. If there's a really negative thought that's running you, you could use one of your coaching sessions to do the work with either Chris or I. So we've loved delivering this material for you. Obviously, it's something that we're both really passionate about, and it can really impact all areas of your life. So we just want to leave you with that and say good night, and we'll be back with you in a couple weeks.
Good night, everybody.